Welcome to a special edition of Community Tides, coming to you during the noon hour on alternate Fridays here at KPTZ with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and my co-host, Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation. Hi, Siobhan.
Hi, Chris. Great to be with you again.
As always, Japanese families have a prominent history on the Olympic Peninsula. Joe Kawamoto, until his recent death, owned the Picture Perfect Farm north of Quilcene on US 101, just south of Lake Leland. Enter the Jefferson Land Trust and its efforts to preserve this historic dairy and farm, owned and farmed by the Kawamoto family for the last 100 years. Here to tell us more are Blaise Sullivan, the Stewardship and Conservation Coordinator of Jefferson Land Trust, and Sarah Spaeth, Director of Conservation and Strategic Partners at the Land Trust. Blaise has been with the organization since 2018, splitting her time, assisting with land protection projects, and helping the stewardship team care for protected lands. Blaise also coordinates the Land Trust Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, a group that aims to address where land conservation and racial justice intersect. Sarah Spaeth is currently the Director of Conservation and Strategic Partnerships at Jefferson Land Trust and was hired in 1996 as the Land Trust's first professional staff. In her 25 years with the Land Trust, she's worked with many landowner partners, community members, and organizations and agencies in creative conservation partnerships to protect the farms, fish, and forests of our part of the Olympic Peninsula. She is a Northwest native and earned degrees in biology from Western Washington University and a master's degree in coastal zone management from the University of Washington. And prior to working for Jefferson Land Trust, she also worked as a consultant on marine resources issues and as a fisheries biologist in Alaska. Sarah and Blaise, welcome to Community Tides.
Thank you, Chris and Siobhan. Really appreciate being here and having the opportunity to share the news of the Kawamoto Farm.
You all do such fantastic work. And Sarah, you know, congratulations on such an amazing track record here for our community. And thank you for everything that you've done and to the whole Jefferson Land Trust team. And just have such deep respect for the work that you all do. And I'm so excited that you're here today to talk about the Kawamoto family and farm. And I thought maybe could you start out just with some history there about the family and farm?
Sure. Well, as Chris mentioned, the property down near Lake Leland has been in the Kawamoto family since 1919, so over 100 years. And there are four generations of the family that have been involved on the farm. Currently, Margie Kawamoto is the family member that is looking to sell the farm. And she contacted the land trust, or her realtor contacted the land trust, to see if we might be interested in helping her protect it as a farm before she sells it. I think that really spoke to Margie and this long legacy of family history on the property. When they acquired it, it was almost all forested. And the first generation of the Kawamoto family who came over from Japan, I don't remember his name, but he and his wife cleared about 50 acres of the trees that were there and put their blood, sweat, and tears into making it into a farm that became a dairy farm, and they grew strawberries. Then, of course, the tragedy of World War II and the Japanese family being sent off to the concentration camps. They managed to hold on to the farm and had neighbors who helped them retain the farm for when they came back. And then Joe Kawamoto and then his son Ray Kawamoto and Ray's wife Margie finally were the last family members to live there. And Ray passed away about 4 years ago. It's a beautiful 148-acre property. About 90 acres of it is on the east side of 101, and that's all forested and has been managed over the years for timber production. And then the very scenic farmhouse and barn that we see when we're driving south on 101, just south of Lake Leland Road, is the original homestead. That home was built in 1938, and the barn was actually built in 1925. So very historic buildings. So when we were contacted by the realtor and by Margie, we felt like, wow, not only does this farm, does this property have conservation value, but there's quite a story to tell of this family's history. And that in broader really encapsulates the story of the Japanese American people who live here in Jefferson County.
I have a quick question about the background. After the Japanese internment, a lot of our Japanese fellow citizens actually lost their properties. How did this property get preserved, get retained for the family?
Our understanding is that they transferred the ownership of the property into Joe's hands. And Joe would have been a young man at the time. And because Joe was born in the United States, he was a U.S. citizen. And that helped them maintain the property in the family ownership. But of course, they were still all sent off to the camps. And it was the neighbors like the Munn family and others in the Lake Leland community that really looked after the property while they were gone.
Those are neighbors.
I love that story of community. And Sarah, you mentioned that it was founded as a dairy farm. Has it operated as a dairy farm ever since then?
No, it has not. Most recently, it was utilized for cattle and basically was for stock. And that's been the most recent use. And I think with Ray's passing about 4 years ago, there's a neighbor that was running his cattle on the property for a while. But at this point, there's really no agricultural production other than haying happening on the property now.
How is this happening? How is this sale happening? And what do you consider to be the ideal buyer for this farm?
Well, it's a really interesting process that we are embarking on, both as the land trust taking the lead role with protecting the farm in perpetuity, and working with a local group called the Jefferson Landworks Collaborative. Initially, when we were contacted by the realtor and by Margie, we said, yes, we would be interested in making sure that this stays a farm and forest forever. And so the land trust began investigating how we might do that, how we might come up with funding to actually purchase restrictive easements, conservation easements on the property that will make sure that it is always available for farming and forestry and not subdivided and converted into other uses that might compromise those conservation values. So to do that, we were successful at getting some funding from the U.S. Navy, which is one of our partners. And with their funds, we facilitate purchase of development rights that are retired forever. And that dovetails with the Navy's mission of making sure that we keep the rural character in areas that are near their installations. It doesn't give them any right to use the land. It's basically ensuring that we don't have urban type development in these areas, which is, of course, our mission as well. But that easement doesn't do everything that the land trust likes to see done, which is dictate how the forest might be managed sustainably, how we ensure that the buildings are kind of contained to a certain area so that we don't end up with a lot of impervious surface on the farm. So in cases like this, we actually place another conservation easement on top of the property that the land trust then monitors and enforces and makes sure that all of those agreements are honored that protect these conservation values.
And Blaise, you're the stewardship and conservation coordinator. How do you come into the picture here?
I will be part of the team that will be monitoring those properties annually. So we have a great stewardship team that does annual monitoring to make sure that the conservation values that those easements are protecting are upheld. So it's all about maintaining really good relationships with our landowners so that they know how to be managing the property in line with the conservation easement that is on the title of the property forever.
We're talking a lot about what can't happen on this property. What would you love to see happen on this property?
It's a really good question. So I think Sarah was getting through kind of just this typical process that Jefferson Land Trust utilizes when we are working to protect a property. And what's really unique about the Kawamoto Farm project is that we have been engaged, like Sarah was saying, with our collaborative group called the Jefferson Landworks Collaborative, which is made up of multiple partners, including WSU Extension, the Food Co-op, Craft 3, which is a nonprofit lender, and the North Olympic Development Council. And this is a group of people that are engaged in making sure that the working lands in Jefferson County remain viable. So we have, with Margie's support, which has been amazing, she is really inspired by this idea of getting the next landowner to be able to bring the Kawamoto farm back into active agricultural and forestry production. And so rather than keeping the property on the open market, which is what she had had it listed as at first, she has agreed to work with the Jefferson Landworks Collaborative to allow us to go through a request for proposals process to find the next landowner. And this has been a really amazing opportunity for us to be able to offer local farmers or farmers regionally and across the country the opportunity to look at this farm, which is now at a reduced agricultural value based on us purchasing those easements that Sarah described before, and start dreaming on what can happen on this property to bring it back into some sort of active agricultural production.
I'm fascinated with the whole advent of the land trust. I know it's not an original idea that we thought up right here in our county or anything like that, but just the process is just totally fascinating to me and wonderful. Sarah, maybe you could speak to how one would establish a price for this.
Well, we as an accredited land trust rely on appraisers to help us determine what the fair market value is, not only of the property, but of these easements. And then what happens to the value of the property once we have purchased some of the rights to the property. So with these two easements that we have acquired, we're essentially reducing the property value by about half. So it's a very interesting thing in that it essentially, our process with our Landworks partners really takes out the speculative value of the property and puts us in a position with Margie, thanks to her agreement, to set a certain price. But then it's really a matter of who has the proposal for the future of the farm that is most in keeping with what the Landworks partners are interested in seeing happen there. So how can we bring the farm back to providing some sort of value to our food system? How can we find someone who can actually help with the management of the forest? And how can we make sure that we're getting someone who will really honor the Japanese American history there with the partners installing some sort of interpretive display for that? So the process that we're going through with our Landworks partners has been fascinating. And we put out a request for proposals far and wide, like Blaise mentioned, and we got a lot of interested parties. Then we said that to anyone who had sent a letter of interest, we would coordinate a couple of days of open houses. And we had probably about 120 people come through on those 2 days.
Amazing. Far and wide. Give me an example.
Well, we had a couple from Colorado fly in. And by hook or by crook, they made it there within a week of when we said what the date was. We had some folks drive up from Portland.
And then a lot of other local people. So those are the far reaching people, but we had an amazing amount of interested community members who are either running small farm operations or certain collectives or just group of friends that have been dreaming on what they could do with a piece of land that they were able to steward on their own. So we had a lot of familiar faces there as well.
Interesting concept to entertain a collective as a purchasing entity.
Yes. And honestly, with the trends that we're seeing in prices of property and the challenges of operating in agricultural land, we are really wanting to provide opportunities for creative ownership models where, you know, we're not restricting the development on the farm to the point where there could only be one family there with a farm manager. We're actually trying to allow a little bit more development potential that's contained, but could allow for some sort of collective ownership. I wanted to just speak a little bit to the expanded process that we're doing with our Landworks collaborative partners, because we recognize that those partners don't necessarily have direct farming experience, and we really wanted to have a diverse group and body of community members to help us with the ultimate selection of who will get this opportunity to buy the farm at this reduced price. So we expanded our Landworks partnership to have this selection committee, and we just have a really great group of dedicated folks who are from local farming organizations, from family, actually, Kawamoto family cousins who are farmers themselves. It's a diverse group. that is really engaged in this process and helping us to screen the multiple applications that we will have submitted by November 19th, and then help us narrow it down to a number of folks that we'll then interview and finally make our decision based on a set of criteria that we've all agreed on. So it's pretty exciting. And I'm just really thrilled that the opportunity is there and that we've got this great group of community members helping us make the decision on who will ultimately be able to buy it.
And Sarah, I'd say even on top of that community group helping us make the decision, they've been engaged with us this whole time. They've helped us craft how we're going to put out this request for proposals, what is required from applicants to put together a proposal. And with the lens that they're bringing is questions around accessibility and how we can be not only getting this request for proposals into the hands of diverse community members, but how we make it a process that is approachable for people who have been historically disadvantaged from being able to own and operate farmland in particular. And so we had some really great recommendations, for example, translating our request for proposal both into Spanish and to Japanese, and making it accessible that even if someone couldn't provide a written letter of interest, that they could access us by phone or by video. And it's just a great group that really shows us what has maybe been some ways that have made it inaccessible for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers to be able to access land ownership beforehand. So that's been a really critical component of this project that we've tried to keep in mind the whole time.
That puts a lump in my throat because it's just an example of true community. I mean, community effort, community collaboration, community ideas, and a community blend. And it's just a wonderful thing.
I agree, Chris. And I'm just really excited by the process and the potential application of this same group, same process for future agricultural projects. And it's just great to be working not only with Margie at this point to help honor her family's legacy there, but how can we carry this forward?
Is the pool of potential buyers defined now, or is this an opportunity that's still open to folks who might be interested?
It's defined. So we had a letter of interest that was due by the end of September. And then those were the folks who were invited to come out to the open house in the middle of October. And since then, now everyone who submitted a letter of interest was invited to put together a full proposal. And it's not open to folks who have not already been involved at this point.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear you, who you all choose. When will we know?
We hope early December to have narrowed our selection down and done some interviews and made our selection.
We're excited too. It's been amazing to read everyone's letters of interest and to see the different ideas. I think one of the biggest takeaways that I had from meeting all the different interested applicants at those open house visits was just that people were talking about how this opportunity was something that they never knew could exist before, and it's allowed them to dream in ways that they hadn't been. And so to Sarah's point, we'd love to be able to keep using this sort of system and methodology that we've created to keep providing accessible opportunities for land ownership.
If anyone out there is listening and has a farm and they're thinking of selling, make sure to be in touch with the Jefferson Land Trust.
Please.
Well, what a wonderful way to end that. I want to thank Blaise Sullivan, Stewardship and Conservation Coordinator at Jefferson Land Trust, and Sarah Spaeth, Director of Conservation and Strategic Partnerships at Jefferson Land Trust. I want to thank you both. Any final words before we sign off?
Well, just thank you for the opportunity. I think it's great to be able to get this story out. And I think that it will be interesting to not only see who ends up being selected for the farm, but just to see how we and the Jefferson County Historical Society and other partners are able to help tell that story of the Kawamoto family and perhaps even the broader history of the Japanese American community members that were here for a long time.
Sarah, I was going to ask if you would pass along our thanks to the Kawamoto family. What a tremendous contribution they've made over the last 100 years and continue to make even in this transition in their family. I know it can't be easy, and we're so grateful for their community-mindedness.
Will do.
Well, once again, thanks, everybody. What a special edition of Community Tides, and it's coming to you at the noon hour on alternate Fridays here on KPTZ with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and my co-host, Siobhan Canty. Thank you so much for joining us today, and the best of luck on everything that's coming down the road.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.